Everything is inspired by the teachings of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who is the founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Today we'd like to talk about the power of stability. It's important that we don't go through life being guided by our feelings and by our sentiments. That's surface living. That's superficial living. If you're on a sailboat, you can't be subject to every single cross breeze that comes along. You've got to set your course and you've got to move forward without being distracted in the direction that you need to go. Striving for stability and consistency, being the same day in and day out, is going to get you to where you would like to go. We all have emotions. We all have feelings. We're not denying that. But we need to learn not to be overwhelmed by them. Rather, we need to learn to manage them. Too many people today are living on how they feel, and their lives are like roller coasters, sometimes euphorically high and sometimes depressingly low. When circumstances are good, they're happy. And when circumstances are bad, they're very unhappy. You never know what they're going to be like. They might be happy on Sunday, depressed on Tuesday, fun to be around Wednesday. Thursday, watch out. If you just look at them wrong, they're going to jump down your throat. Moody people, unstable people, are selfish people. They're very difficult to live and to be around. They're not fair to the people around them, to their friends, to their family members, to their co-workers. They're all over the board. And anybody who has to spend any amount of time with them lives on pins and needles, having to guess what they're going to be like on any given day, at any given time. We have got to come up higher if we're going to become everything that we're meant to be. Life is too short. We don't have the time, nor do we have the ability to do damage control when we lash out, lose our temper, say unkind words. Here's the key. Your will is stronger than your feelings or your emotions. Imagine this scenario. A husband and wife are arguing. Blood pressures are rising. Voices are getting more strident. The gunny sacks have come out. They're starting to pull out all the wrong things that each have done in the last 20 years. The atmosphere is so full of stress and anxiety, you could practically cut it through a knife. The phone rings in the midst of all this. The husband or the wife picks up the phone and says, "Hello, how can I help you?" That's proof in itself, that little scenario, that you can manage, that you can tamp down your feelings if you want to. You may not feel like doing it at the moment, but it is within the realm of capabilities. The more that you do it, the easier it becomes. Stop asking yourself in the morning what the day is going to be like. Start telling yourself in advance what the day is going to be like. This will be a good day. I'm going to enjoy it, and I'm going to be a blessing to someone. If you don't make these kinds of changes over time, this will cost you. Instability, inconsistency, moodiness might cost you a marriage. It might well cost you relationship with your children. It will cost you perhaps your job down the line. And it will definitely cause opportunities that would have normally come across your path not to do so. When we live by feelings, doors will close for us that have otherwise been open. People should be happy to see you when you walk in a room. Shouldn't have the attitude, "Oh no, Dad's home from work. I wonder what he's going to be like tonight." Even if you don't feel in a good mood yourself, you should learn to discipline yourself for your family's sake. Our attitudes rub off on people around us. For example, if you have a bad day at work, but you come home and you don't show it, that's setting a great example that if the kids have a bad day at school, let them not also come home and take it out on mom and their siblings as well. Check it at the door. Some people walk in a room and everybody can feel the tension. They've just brought it with them. If we'll learn to be disciplined in our thinking and not going around dwelling on our problems or who hurt us or how unfair a situation is, we will lift people up and we will be welcomed and a joy when we're around them. I heard about a man before he opened the door. He had an oak tree in the front yard, which he called his trouble tree. whatever frustrations or anxieties or aggravations that build up during the day at the office, he would just take a moment, count to 10, and give his troubles psychically to the trouble tree. Having done that and left his troubles at the door, he'd open the door and say, "Hi, honey. Hi, kids. I'm home." Maturity, character kicks in when we don't feel like smiling, when we don't feel like being friendly, but we do it anyway. We overcome our feelings to the contrary. We all have our problems. Nobody's exempt. But if we don't learn to shake it off, it will not only drag us down, but it'll drag others down too. God will do his part. He'll work from the inside out to change us, but we have to do our part and work from the outside in. If we want to experience life on a deeper level, we have to overcome what we feel or what our emotions are trying to tell us to do and learn to do what's right. This is the concept of dharma, or duty in Sanskrit. Prabhupada says here, "The vast ocean is always filled with water, especially during the rainy season. But the ocean remains the same, steady. It's not agitated, nor does it cross beyond the limits of its bank." That is also true of a person fixed in Krishna or God consciousness. As long as one has the material body, the demands of the body for sense gratification will continue. The devotee, however, is not disturbed by such desires because of his fullness. He chants, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, and he becomes filled up with transcendental satisfaction. Someone who's in touch with the Lord through his holy names is compared to a tree by the bank of a mighty river. For hundreds or even thousands of miles around, there may be drought conditions, heat, things are burning up, withering, life is not being supported, but that tree, by virtue of being right next to the river, has an unlimited source of hydration. It will not be affected by the external circumstances. Similarly, when we contact the Lord by chanting, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, we're putting our roots deep, deep down and getting sustenance directly from He who created millions and millions of universes. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who appeared 500 years ago in India, he said the secret of stability is humility. He said in a humble state of mind, one can chant the holy names of the Lord constantly, feeling oneself more humble than a blade of grass, more tolerant than the tree, and ready to offer respects to all living beings. The tree is not bothered by heat or drought. It doesn't complain. It doesn't ask, how come I get the raw deal of standing out here in the scorching sun? How come I get to unfairly stand here in the rain and the snow? The tree is not self-absorbed. The tree doesn't dwell on its own so-called problems. The tree extends its branches to give cooling shade to travelers in the summer and to protect them from wind and rain and snow in the winter. So when you're consistent, your roots go down deep and you're not bothered by circumstances. During bad times, you're not just going to survive, but you're going to thrive. Your roots are in touch with Yogeshwara, the master of all mystic powers, for whom nothing is impossible. You're not only going to prosper, but you're going to come out on the other side of those dry seasons twice as good as you were before. Again, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna, "O son of Partha, that determination which is unbreakable, which is sustained by steadfastness and yoga practice, and which thus controls the activities of the mind, life, and senses, is determination in the mode of goodness." What am I saying? That we should know that God or Krishna is bigger than anything that we're facing. These troubles, they didn't come to stay, they came to pass. We can tolerate them in the mode of goodness. Lord Brahma, the creator, is considered in the mode of passion, and his color is red. Lord Shiva is considered the presiding deity of those in the mode of ignorance and destruction, and his color is dark. Lord Vishnu is the preserver in the mode of goodness, and his color is white. In ancient times, the sages and saints got to discussing who was the greatest amongst Brahma or Shiva or Vishnu, and they concluded that whoever could not be provoked was the most stable and therefore was the greatest. Bhrigu Muni was commissioned to test each one of those three consecutively. He went up to Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma was the father of Bhrigu Muni. It was customary in Vedic culture to offer your obeisances to bow down before your father. So Bhrigu Muni made a mental offense at his father. He neglected to bow down. Lord Brahma was immediately offended. He lost it, and he started to pronounce a curse on his own son. Next, Bhrigu Muni went to his brother, Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva does penances and austerities in the Himalayas. He covers himself with ashes and goes deep into meditation. But when he saw Bhrigu coming, he was delighted to see his brother. He broke his meditation and he went towards Bhrigu with open arms to embrace him. Bhrigu verbally insulted his brother. He said, "Brother, you haven't probably had a shower in a long time, and if you don't mind, I'd rather we not embrace at this point in time." Lord Shiva lost it. He became disturbed emotionally. He lifted his trident, cocked his trident with the intention of killing Bhrigu Muni. Finally, Bhrigu Muni came to Lord Vishnu, lying on the ocean, on Anantashesha, his feet being massaged by Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune. He committed a mental offense to his father Brahma. He committed a verbal offense to his brother Shiva. But the worst offense, a corporal, a bodily offense, he committed to Lord Vishnu. He put his foot right on the chest of Lord Vishnu. This is the greatest offense that you can do in the Vedic culture, to put your foot, which has been walking in the dirt, to put the foot, which is the lowest part of your body, on the upper body of another person. So with the greatest provocation, how did Lord Vishnu react? He said, "Bhrigu, your foot is so soft. My chest is hard like a thunderbolt. I would never forgive myself if you had hurt your foot by coming into contact with me. Let me give you a little reflexology here. Make sure that you're okay." And Bhrigu Muni was astounded. That surely Lord Vishnu, who is in charge of the mode of goodness, the preserver, the maintainer, he is the greatest, greater than Brahma the creator, greater than Shiva the destroyer. And all the demigods from above blew conch shells, they banged kettle drums, and they showered flowers. The unequivocal conclusion was that in the mode of goodness, Lord Vishnu was the greatest of all the deities. And just as Lord Vishnu cannot be disturbed by circumstances, it is said that the devotees of Lord Vishnu, neither they can be disturbed either. A typical prayer of a devotee is, "Make me an atom at your lotus feet. Make me an atom at your lotus feet." What are lotus feet? Lotus grows within dirt, mud, and water. And yet it never gets dirty, and it never gets wet. You can splash it, and it'll be bone dry shortly thereafter. The Lord is in the world, but he's not of the world. And those who take shelter of his lotus feet are similarly undisturbed by external circumstances. They are consistent and stable in their spiritual practices. Here again in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says, "A selfish man who has renounced the fruit of his actions attains peace, born of steadfastness. But the man who is not selfless and who is led by desire is attached to the fruit and therefore bound." In another part of the Gita, Krishna talks about a type of men who are called duskritina. Kritina means merit, talent, and abilities. God gives us all talents and abilities. No one is accepted. Every one of us is gifted. However, duskritina means those who misuse their talents and abilities for their own self-promotion, for their own self-aggrandizement. These people are often, however talented they may be, sitting on the sidelines while people of more constancy, people who are less inclined to grandstand or show off or to want themselves as the center of attention, people who are willing to put God first place, are down on the field scoring the goals. Krishna says, "On whom do I bestow favors and blessings? Tesham satata yuktanam. Those who are attached to me constantly, constantly, daily, as a regular practice, those are eligible for my blessings, my favors, who don't live for 2 weeks on the mountaintop and then 3 months down in the valley of depression. Those are eligible for my favor who take a calm delight in devotional service, a calm delight in those who love them and in those they love, a calm delight in all the wonders and beauties of nature and for all the things that we have to be grateful. Those who learn to be consistently happy, consistently grateful, consistently friendly will achieve victory in this life. Not living by what we feel, but by what we know. It's never a good idea to get too excited about anything. It's never a good idea to get yourself worked up to an emotional peak, because the law of nature says that everything that goes up must come down. As unnaturally high as you get, count on it that in the future you will pay the price by going unnaturally low. Learn to love steady and to love long. Lasting love is not powered by feelings or emotions or infatuation. Lasting love is powered by character. Lasting love is guided by the vows that one takes. Prabhupada says here, the ability to overcome unsteadiness is called steadfastness. And the Sanskrit word for that is dati. When one is fully qualified, yet is humble and gentle, and when one is able to keep his balance both in sorrow and the ecstasy of joy, he has the opulence called sama. Do you know anyone that just lives for their 2 week vacation? Anyone in the office? They drag through 52 weeks of work, just ticking the days off the calendar till they go off for 2 weeks, and they finally have their 2 weeks vacation, then they drag back into the office. How about people who drag Monday through Friday? They're only waiting for the weekend. How about Super Bowl weekend in the United States of America? How many people live for Super Bowl weekend? The excitement, the hype, the build-up, and then the letdown on Monday morning. In 2001, we opened this building. It was the achievement of a lifetime, June 23rd. Now, Orrin Hatch came from Washington, D.C. to be the keynote speaker. Gary Herbert, who's now the governor, was at that time Utah County Commissioner, and he was also on hand. We had about 5,000 people who celebrated the opening of this wonderful temple. All of those people came up, they congratulated by Bobby and I. We accepted their congratulations. We gave credit to them because many of them had donated. All of them had been our well-wishers, so we felt it was a community achievement. However, there was something in me that was very sober and not at all euphoric on that day. Because I realized that with a blessing always comes a burden. With a blessing comes a responsibility. Blessings don't have periods after them. God doesn't give you a blessing period. He gives you a blessing comma. So he blessed us with this temple, but along with that came a huge responsibility. I knew that our work wasn't over when we built the temple. I knew that our work was just beginning. Whatever we'd done before with the facility of this temple, we did 10, 20 times more since then. It's a very, very sobering thought to be entrusted with such resources on behalf of the Lord. The devotees, they just pray for service, whether they're in palatial surroundings or whether they're living on the street. They simply pray, Lord, don't kick me away. Don't deprive me of service. In success or failure, whether I'm building a temple or sharpening pencils for the Sunday services, whether I'm sweeping the veranda, just give me some service. I don't care whether I'm considered a big devotee or a little devotee or a great devotee or an insignificant devotee. I just want to get some service. Please don't deprive me of service. Maybe the fact that you're here today and I'm talking on this subject matter might mean that Krishna wants you to make a decision to enjoy every day and be consistently appreciative and joyful. Not to make the mistake of living for big events. Today is a big event. The sunrise this morning was a big event. The sunset is a big event. Your friends, your relatives, that's a big event. The breath, we do yoga here every night. And the more I do yoga, the more I learn to appreciate the simple breath that God endowed me with, the simple prana. If you're conscious of your breath, you'll never be up or down. You'll be constant and steady in all circumstances. It won't matter whether you're rich or poor, whether you're being honored or whether you're living in disgrace. Our emotions will test us. Some of you are living up and down, and you're hard to get along with, and you blame it on your circumstances. You blame it on how someone is treating you. I'm asking you today to put a smile on your face, to stop making excuses and start taking responsibility. Let's rule over our feelings and emotions and choose to be in a good mood no matter what the circumstances. When things are coming against you, you're smiling and no one can tell it. Being in a sour mood never helped anything. It just made it worse. Turn things over to Krishna. Say, Lord, I'm not going to let this challenge, this critic, steal my joy. I believe that you, Lord, are in control and that you'll not only turn this situation around, but if I keep a smile on my face and I keep being good to other people, you'll bring me out twice as better than I was before. What am I saying? Stay on the offensive. Don't allow yourself to destabilize. The best way to show your trust in Krishna or God is to stop looking at your own problems and start looking at your God. Stand firm. Don't get upset. Don't lose your peace. That will be your faith at work, paving the way for Krishna to turn things around in your favor. The moment that you feel discouragement coming on, you need to learn to shake it off and say, no, I'm not going there. I'm going to be in a place where God can get involved and get active. Here's another important key. Be realistic, not idealistic. I have my plan, I have my timetable, but realistically speaking, I'm not in control. Krishna is going to do it his way, and he's going to do it in his timetable. In 1977, Prabhupada took ill. Prabhupada had come to America. He taught us the devotional culture. He picked us up from all kinds of addictions and bad habits. He circled the world 13 times. He wrote 3,000 letters of counsel. He published 8,500 page books. He was everything for us. He was everything for us. So all over the world, the 108 temples that Prabhupada established at that time, now there's 600, we were asked to pray after the morning services, Dear Lord Krishna, if it is your desire, please cure Srila Prabhupada. We prayed that day after day, week after week for several months, but Prabhupada passed away finally in November of 1977. That's the way of it. It was the worst day of my life. But eventually, our fathers, our mentors, our coaches, they'll pass on. They can't stay with us forever. They may love us, nourish us, give us confidence for a season, but it is the way of things that the child eventually has to become and step into the shoes of the father. The student eventually has to become the teacher. It's unrealistic to want to hold on to your teachers and your mentors and your parents forever. We live in an imperfect world with imperfect people. Let's not set ourselves up for disappointment by being overly idealistic, expecting everything to be perfect. We can't expect our spouse to be perfect. We can't expect everything to turn out our way. Lord, these are my plans for today, but I'm putting them on the altar. Whatever happens, I'm going to trust in you. I'm going to stay in faith. As friendly and as good looking as most of you are, and as much as I'm sure that you help other people out, there'll be some people who will not like you no matter what you do. That's the nature of the material world. Let's be realistic. Let's not be idealistic. As soon as you come into this world, there will be enemies. You didn't do anything to deserve it. I imagine the postman, every day he asks, why does this dog hate me? That's just the way that the world was created. The world was created for dogs to hate postmen and want to bite their legs. There's nothing you can do about it. Don't be idealistic. Be realistic. Take the inbuilt opposition of this world, the friction of this world, as golden opportunities to build your character. Stability is a sign of maturity. I'm asking today, let's not live by how we feel. Let's go deeper than that. Act by what we know, and we know that He's in control. We know that He has a great plan for our lives. We know that His power for us is greater than any power against us. No matter how friendly we are, no matter how much good we do, someone will not like you, and therefore it's up to us to decide beforehand that whatever doesn't work out today or however someone treats me, it's not going to change my attitude. I'm not going to lose my joy if I get stuck in traffic. I'm not going to get stressed if I don't get all my work done. It's not going to ruin my day if someone criticizes me. I'm going to be not overly high and not overly low. Not going to live in the mountaintop, and I'm not going to live in the valley either. In the Bhagavad Gita, it says, a realized soul, sukha dukkha sama kripa. He sees happiness and he sees distress, sama kripa. He sees them both equally. Learns to shake off negative feelings, learns to put the roller coaster mentality behind. If we learn to do these things, how to be steady and constant and be in the middle, avoid the highs and the lows, it could save your marriage. It could save your job. It could give you the strength that you need to live a long, satisfying life. Finish your race with a flourish. Learn to wake in the morning and decide that you're going to have a great day. Decide that you're going to be consistently happy, consistently grateful, consistently in a good mood. If you do this, even in the dry seasons, Krishna will not only promote you, but He will prosper you. You'll live in victory in this life, no matter what the circumstances, and in the next life, you'll go back home, back to Godhead.